Defense Chief James Mattis popped up in Afghanistan today. The Trump administration is trying to restart peace talks with the Taliban. 17 years. That's how long the war in Afghanistan has been going on. Afghans still live with near daily violence, suicide bombings that kill indiscriminately. And the war has left its mark on the hundreds of thousands of Americans who went to fight there. Just this week, one of them was killed in an insider attack. C.J. Chivers' new book deals with that personal trauma. Chivers is a New York Times journalist and a former Marine. In his book, The Fighters, he tells the story of six combatants. One of them is Specialist Robert Soto, a soldier who initially impressed Chivers with his optimism.
A lot of us, if we put on uniforms, we look virtually alike. You tend almost to sometimes, you know, at 100 yards look like an insect horde. But at 100 yards, you would see Rob Soto's smile.
Wow.
It would light up the valley.
That's C.J. Chivers there. He dropped by our studios yesterday to talk with my colleague Marco Werman. Marco asked him to read the part of his book where he introduces Soto, an aspiring actor who joined the Army when he was 17.
He was nobody's archetype of a fighter. He had an enormous smile, which came to him almost unprompted. He liked to sing, and he sang often. His memory had at its command a vast repertoire of lyrics, R&B, rap, hip-hop, the blues, his personal collection of gems, which he would sing no matter what anyone else thought. Robbie Soto joined the Army upbeat, fast with that grin, the guy who made others feel good.
I was struck by your descriptions of Soto's patrols in Afghanistan's Korangal Valley that honestly kind of seemed mindless, as if we painted a bullseye on a bunch of guys engaged in fights with the Taliban. How soon after arriving and being in these firefights did Soto start to have a different view of the war?
I'd say that Robbie went from idealist to realist inside of 6 weeks.
Wow.
Maybe 2 months.
Why? What happened?
He arrived
time?
In July, and by September, he lost his squad leader and one of the soldiers who had a previous tour in Iraq who he looked up to most, and a fellow new soldier. He could see that what they were doing wasn't going to work.
And who's they?
What the Army was doing, what NATO and the generals who had put the soldiers up in the valley at such a low level that they really could not affect the valley. And he concluded fairly quickly that they were there just because they were there. He couldn't find a strategic purpose. He couldn't draw a line. I mean, it's important when we talk about Robbie to realize that he was a young child when the World Trade Center was attacked.
Right.
And he wanted to protect New York City from another attack. And not long after joining the Army and arriving in Korangal Valley, he could not draw a line to what the day-to-day life of his platoon was, to making New York City safer.
Yeah, that point of view kind of hits me throughout the book, the extent to which these soldiers feel as these soldiers and these Marines feel as though their leaders are incompetent. Soto says of his superiors that they got him on the other side of the world on this mountain fighting these guys and they don't even know what they're doing. That's a big indictment.
That's a big indictment, and I would say it was fairly common indictment. 8 years into this war, it was starting to feel, except for the purpose of surviving each patrol, it was starting to feel for many of the people involved purposeless.
Tell us about Navy pilot Lieutenant Commander Lane McDowell and what has haunted him since 1999.
Lane is different than Robin, that he had joined before 9/11. He was a Naval Academy midshipman who excelled academically and athletically and found himself in flight school and became an F-14 pilot. And he had a lot of war experience before 2001, before the attacks on 9/11, including in Kosovo. And he was, as a lieutenant, very involved in the bombing in Kosovo for a few months. And one of those bombs, he believes, may have hit a civilian home. And he has been thinking about that for decades.
Could you read, actually, that part where he does talk about that?
He felt a chill. Have I killed a family? His analytical mind tallied factors. The intelligence had been poor. The imagery was bad. The tactics and ground fire had compressed his decision window. Drifting cloud deck had blocked his view. By his accounting, these were not acceptable excuses. Doubt had registered in his mind during the bomb's descent. He could have dragged the ordnance off target into a field. He had not done that. He was responsible for whatever had happened in that house. Up until now, I could say positively, while I have certainly killed Serb soldiers, I had not harmed a civilian. Now I don't know. It concerns me, partly because we were sent after a target impossible to see and the imagery was bad, but also that I allowed it to happen. I can only pray that God made sure no one was there. I can only hope there is no innocent blood on my hands.
And yet McDowell's superiors aren't worried about these possible civilian deaths, are they?
At that moment, they weren't especially worried, and Lane saw that moral gap. He actually wanted to be reprimanded or to have the what he thought was likely a mishap examined so that its causes would be understood and so that maybe perhaps changes could be made. And that wasn't the attitude of his bosses. It was more like, we need to get back out and hit tomorrow's target list.
We pinged our veterans network asking about the psychological toll serving in Afghanistan and Iraq had taken on them. And we got to this from John Hudak, a former service member now in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
On my 11th deployment, as I was engaging an enemy combatant, I noticed that he was a man, a husband, a father, a brother. The psychic shift in seeing a target as so much more as actually a human shattered my ability to operate in combat areas. I retired shortly thereafter.
And we got this from a vet in our community.
Hi, my name's Mike from Pottstown, Pennsylvania. The psychic toll that the war in Afghanistan has taken on me is what makes me 100% disabled and unemployable. I can't figure out how to live in a way that makes up for it in order to heal. I no longer fit into American society.
And we got this from a service member in Irvine, California. I'm just getting out of bed, exhausted after another night of restless sleep and nightmares. It's this way most nights. For many years, I drank until the dreams wouldn't wake me or I wouldn't remember them. On top of that, I'm hypervigilant, uneasy in crowds, and easily startled. I'm just curious, Chris, among the lower ranks, how widespread is the view that higher-ups are disconnected from what really happens on the ground, and how much are they talking about this actively?
Many of the higher-ups now do have experience on the ground in Afghanistan and Iraq, and they certainly are alert to accounts like you just heard and what people have come home with. But I would also say that there is a feeling – I don't want to speak for all vets, but there is a prevalent feeling that the wars have been adrift for a very long time and that all of their tactical and personal efforts – all of the years poured into this by the rank and file weren't really connected to realistic ambitions or thoughtful strategy.
You've got this amazing quote opening the book, America is not at war. The Marine Corps is at war. America is at the mall. That was written inside the wall of a government center in Iraq.
In 2009, so almost a decade ago.
Yeah.
So this isn't a new sentiment. You know, about 3 million people who've been to the wars in uniform, which is less than 1% of the country. And I did feel a certain obligation to try to close that gap. So there's a lot of things that happen in this book that will make a reader uncomfortable, and there's a lot of moral gray.
Have you gotten any feedback from people at the Pentagon about the book?
Officially, no. Unofficially, every day. Many of those people aren't able to speak their feelings publicly. Some of them operate as insurgents within the system, and no small number of them are in touch with me, and they're very grateful that the rank and file's voices were channeled. They're grateful that the book tried to capture actual combat experiences and to show it as claustrophobically as it often really was, not with a great deal of strategic connection.
Honestly, I got anxious reading this book. It's not easy reading, but I doubt you wanted it to be easy. You're a vet yourself. I also know you have kids. Imagine one of them comes to you and says, they're ready to enlist. What would you say?
So my kids. One of my sons is 18, will be graduating this year, and he has expressed an interest. He had expressed an interest in enlisting in the Marine Corps. And it's their decision. Each young person has to make the decision whether or not the military would potentially be something that they would serve for 4 years or for a career. But I would say that right now I do line up as a discouraging voice, having seen great human energy applied to unrealistic and sometimes senseless strategies.
Chris Chivers is the author of The Fighters, Americans in Combat in Afghanistan and Iraq. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And an update on those two service members we mentioned in Chivers' book. Robert Soto now lives in New York and is a songwriter and rapper. As for Lieutenant Commander Lane McDowell, the Navy pilot haunted by his bombing missions in Kosovo, he remains on active duty in the Alaskan Command.